A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. And it's taking me a lot not to laugh, but every time we talk before an episode or before we start recording, we tell each other, be quiet, don't tell me until we start recording. And then we almost have nothing to say because if we just open our mouths and start talking, we're just going to tell each other everything before we even start recording. I think it's hilarious.
Yes, I do too. I'm going to preface this episode by saying, first of all, and this is one thing Amy and I were just talking about, is it's so flattering to us when you guys make cake suggestions and you direct it toward one of us. Like, Amy will love this case because it's from the 1920s, for example. But you have come to realize, like, what we enjoy in cases. And we love that. The person that suggested this case, I feel like you guys really, for me, challenged me. Because I constantly say, children don't leave their lives. And then someone will suggest a case where children left their lives. Or things like that.
Right.
And I feel like you're constantly pushing me, which I love. But in this case, I want to tear my hair out.
More than usual?
Yes, because I just don't understand. Okay, I'm going to just get into it because this is what we have to do. And I'm sorry, but in my opinion, the theories on this one are more like the Holly Cantrell case, where it's less of a what happened and more of a who's involved in what happened.
Okay.
But either way.
Never heard of this person. So to be completely honest, I don't even know if it's a male or a female.
It's a female. And I will say there's actually not a whole lot of news articles out there. And I'll get into that within the first few minutes. So we're going to dive in. Today I'm going to talk about Brooklee Lukes. Or Lukes. I'm sorry if I mispronounced her last name. And I listened to two recordings. And I apologize. She was born in December of 82, so she's right in our age range.
Mm-hmm.
She's from Greenwood, Indiana. There's not a whole lot about her childhood. She's close to her sister, Mista, and has a good relationship with her parents. They divorced, but both parents seem to be present in her life. Brooklee's mid-teen years were actually quite a struggle. Brooklee was her sister did actually one long-form podcast interview. Mm-hmm. And I listened to that and I understand it. I can't possibly understand what it's like to have your sister go missing. Right. Look, I can't wrap my head around it.
Right. And you have a sister you're very close with.
Right. What I struggle with when I listen to, and this is all family interviews, is they're very emotional, which they should be. But you have to extract the fact from the conjecture.
I hear what you're saying, yeah.
Brooklee was in what sounds like a long-term abusive relationship in her mid-teens to late-teens years.
Okay.
Which was a catalyst to drug use. She became addicted to methamphetamines. She was arrested in 2001. And she was 19. And it seems like this arrest was sort of her, like, I'm done.
I see.
She called her sister one day and was like, I can't be in this relationship anymore. Come pick me up. And her sister was like, it was the call I was like praying for.
Sure.
She got sober. She was completing her community service. Her probation was almost up. She moved in with her dad. Actually had gotten a lake house and had an apartment in town. So Brooklee and her sister moved into the apartment and sort of like lived on their own. In their dad's apartment. Now, some of the articles say, like, the day of her disappearance, she stopped by her dad's. And I think that's because people don't realize that, like, although it was her dad's, she was living there.
Okay.
So she had, like I said, she completed most of her probation. Her community service was almost done. She had, you know, started working at her dad's restaurant as a waitress. She really had put her life back on track. A lot of articles reference, too, that she thought about modeling. She was 5'2 and, like, a size 2, like, teeny tiny little girl. And just really, it sounds like, put her life on the right trajectory.
I'm glad. That sounds great.
So that brings us to June 24th, 2002. Brooklyn gets back to her apartment around 4 p.m. and realizes the door is open and the apartment's been burglarized.
Mm-hmm.
So she calls 911 and the police come. And when the police are there, she calls her sister, who's staying at her mom's, and tells her what's happening. And police, like, take the police report. They clear the scene. They take inventory of what's missing, which is, like, a few electronics, computers, that type of thing. And
yes.
They police essentially say, like, no one's in the apartment. We're good. And police leave around 5:30 p.m. Okay?
Okay.
Brooklyn calls her mom and is like, I don't want to stay here, which, same. I wouldn't want to stay in that apartment alone either. It just got broken into.
No, it's eerie. That,
right, it's especially if you're alone.
And I don't know if you've ever been burglarized and...
I have not, and the idea of it terrifies me.
Our family business was burglarized several years ago, and this isn't anything that I personally have to do with. I'm just part of the family, and I was very surprised at how violating it felt, even as far removed as I was, and it wasn't my home. So to have it be your own home, I think would be just heightened beyond what I can conceptualize.
I agree 100% with that. So I totally understand Brooklyn saying, I'm good.
Yep.
I'm not going to stay here. So she tells her mom she had actually gotten into a new relationship that her sister says was super healthy. And she says, you know, my boyfriend lives 30 minutes away. I'm just going to head to his house and stay there. I'll be good.
Okay.
And her mom says, okay, great. Fantastic. No one has seen or heard from Brooklyn again.
There we go. You just, out of nowhere, you're like, that's the end of the story. But I assume that there's a lot more to this.
There is.
Okay.
So, 2 days later, Brooklyn doesn't show up to work at her dad's restaurant. And it sounds
two
like she
days?
Had it sounds like she had the next day off. It also sounds like she hadn't called her boyfriend to say she was coming.
Yes, and I'm sorry. That sounded super judgy. I think I was just surprised.
I hear you. But I think this is just, and again, this is not well documented. But what I gather, and if anyone has more information, please let me know, is she hadn't called her boyfriend to say, hey, I'm coming yet. She was really dealing with her parents and 911 and the police and trying to, like, deal with all that stuff.
Okay.
So her parents, her mom and her sister think she's going to her boyfriend's. Her boyfriend doesn't know she's coming. So everyone just kind of thinks she's somewhere else. And then when she doesn't show up to work, people go, hold up, wait a second, where is she?
Yeah.
Which is awful. You know, like like you just said, 2 days. But it sounds like it was all a kind of pass crossed.
Yeah, just really unfortunate circumstances that you can't predict.
So police actually take this pretty seriously. And one thing I will say about the interview with her sister is she has nothing but praise for law enforcement.
Wonderful.
Usually family says, like, they aren't doing enough, they're not solving the case, et cetera, et cetera. Her sister could not have said enough good things about law enforcement in this case. They took it pretty seriously from the start. And I think that's because, and this is just my tangent, it's my opinion, the last person to see her was a police officer.
Interesting. How often does that happen?
Right. Well, he left her house after the report.
Yes.
And that was it. So media runs the story and they start looking for tips. And has anyone seen her, heard from her, whatever. So a witness calls. And this is going to be, I don't know, Are you ready for this?
No.
Okay, well, good. Buckle up.
Okay.
A witness calls, and they said, hey, they lived in her apartment hall. Actually, I think it was her apartment building. So they're familiar with her. And they're like, I saw her around 5:45 p.m. getting in the passenger side of her car with a male.
Okay.
Okay, fine. That seems okay. But the witness also says, oh, well, I think the witness did not know about the break-in, right? Because who knows if they're related. Right. The witness says, I think he'd been there for a while, though, because I saw him moving a computer out of the apartment at 3:30.
Oh, okay. Oh.
You just had the same response I did. Oh, okay. Well, so maybe he robbed her. Wait a second. What?
Keep going.
Yeah, so he says, the witness says, okay, this guy had, like, shaggy blonde hair and was, like, it's probably the same age as Brooklyn.
Okay. Okay? Yep.
Also, pretty quickly, within 3 or 4 days, another anonymous tip comes in. And they say, hey, I think I know where her car is. It's in Waverly, Indiana, which is about 10 miles away. Now, the car was found abandoned in a parking lot, and this is important, near Indiana State Road 37 and Highway 144, okay?
Which so far doesn't mean a lot to me, but I assume you're going to tell me why it should.
Right. Well, it will eventually. Now comes what I would say is the fun part. Let's just go ahead and dive into the shady cast of characters that are involved in this story, I guess.
Yeah.
So although Brooklyn had put her life back on track, her social circle was comprised of less than honorable characters, is the nicest way I can put it. Okay. So Brooklyn had actually introduced her dad a few years back to a regular at the restaurant named Joe Nowicki. He was 52, about the same age as her dad, and he became good friends with her dad. They called him Old Uncle Joe, like, friend of the family.
Okay.
Turns out, he was also Brooklyn's dad's drug dealer, and her dad was addicted to prescription pills.
Okay.
So, put that aside for a second.
All right, got it.
So, police are sort of diving into, you know, Brooklyn's associates. Her boyfriend had been cleared because he had no idea. The one that she was going to his house.
Yeah. Yeah.
They started questioning all these people. No one has an idea of anything that could have happened to her. No one knows anything, you know, super helpful.
Yeah.
But they have her car, right? So they process her car. And there's only one fingerprint on her car, which means it was clearly wiped clean. And it's on, like, the hood near the grill, I guess, of the front.
As if someone, maybe popped the hood?
Yeah, and it's Joe Nowicki's fingerprint. So police go to his house, and they're like, hey, what's up? And he's like, oh, yeah, I worked on her car sometimes. I'm friends with their dad. Like, I didn't do anything. But police think it's super weird. And it's the only lead they have at this point, right?
Yes. So, hopefully you're checking out all the leads.
Right. So, although they say, you know, okay, we understand that you worked in our car, they still get a warrant to search his house. Because he had a criminal record.
Of course he does.
Right. Again, this is a great cast of characters we're going to have here. So they search his house, and they found blood in his garage. It's a little spatter. It's not, they allude, it's not, it's like a tiny amount. But there's still blood, right? They test it. It comes back to Brooklyn.
No, sir.
So they ask him about this. And he says, yeah, she reupholstered some of my furniture for me as like a side job. And she cut herself while doing it.
He certainly has an explanation for everything.
For everything. individually, each thing isn't bad, right? Like, oh, well, he worked on a car. He's friends with his dad. That makes sense. Or he did some side work for her, and she cut herself in his garage and is a little bit whatever.
Yes.
Either way, they arrest him because they find firearms in his house, and he has a felon. He can't have firearms. So
they got him there.
But don't worry. He says they were his wife's, and he only claimed them. He didn't use them. So either way. So then police, while they have him in custody, say, okay, well, where were you the night that Brooklyn went missing? And first he said he was home all night. But in the copious amounts of people that have been talked to in this case, a lot of them included parts of their night as, I got a call from Joe needing a ride somewhere.
That's okay.
So multiple people said, like, I'm talking a dozen people.
All right.
Said they got a call from him that night saying that he needed to get picked up. And either, oh, obviously they didn't do it or whatever. But either way, police are like, well, why are you lying about what happened? So then police pull his phone records. And he made dozens of calls to her dad and multiple mutual acquaintances that evening to get picked up on the side of the road about a mile from the intersection of 37 and 144.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So it looks great for him.
This right? looks so bad.
By the way, everyone he called, he told them a different reason he needed a ride.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Like, it's not like he was consistent and said, my car ran out of gas or whatever it might be.
That does not seem wise.
No, it doesn't at all.
Okay.
Okay, he's in jail now for, not, I don't mean now, but he's in jail at this point for the firearms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And police are now interrogating all the people he called that evening, including her dad, her mutual friends. And it sounds like Joe sold drugs to more than just her dad. He sold them to, like, her social group also. So they all knew each other. And that's not a fact. That's just what I'm gathering from how this all ties in.
Okay.
There are, you know, 10 or 12 people that have been now questioned, asking what happened. Police have now named Joe as a suspect and sort of said, okay, and at this point, Joe is diagnosed with cancer, okay? And he basically says, and this is according to Brooklyn's sister, I couldn't find this anywhere, that if you let me out of jail, I'll talk to you about Brooklyn. To basically die at home, right? So they release him on parole, and he passed away without ever giving an interview.
Get out. How did they not, like, meet him at his house?
Amy, wait a second. 4 months after Brooklyn's disappearance, her dad overdosed. So he is also deceased.
Stop.
And that is sort of the end of where everything is. Now, one thing is the police detective, Eric, and I'm going to butcher this name, Klinkowski.
Okay.
Did say, why did Joe tell different stories for this to this people for the same reason? But none of it proves anything. It just shows he just told a lie about why he needed a ride. It doesn't prove anything else.
So if all that's true, then he, at the end, lied and used her and any potential knowledge to get out of jail just to go home.
Mm-hmm. And then just one more exciting thing over here that you needed to hear. Brooklyn's sister, Misa, found out later that the robbery was actually a setup to get insurance money from her dad.
Was it a setup by Brooklyn?
No. Like, her dad planned his own robbery to get the insurance
money. Oh, that's
money.
Awful. And how scary for Brooklyn.
Well, but that's only according to Misa. That's not any documentation either. But I don't think she... But Mista swears up and down she does not think her dad knows anything or anything about Brooklyn's disappearance.
I could see that, absolutely.
My only struggle with that is Joe called him twice that night.
Okay. So,
okay, the theories are Joe did it by himself, right? There's another theory that Joe actually was in love with Brooklyn and wanted to, like, be with her.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I did get some creepy vibes.
And then there's a theory that Joe is actually not involved in just wrong place, wrong time, because she got into a car with a guy her own age. Because witnesses saw her getting into her car with a guy her own age. Then there is the she confronted her dad about the robbery and her dad is involved.
Oh, wow.
And then there's the one that I hate the most, which is, in my opinion, the most likely, which is very much in a I know what you did last summer theory. And multiple people know what happened. And no one's going to come forward because they're all involved. If Joe... Oh, you go first.
I don't know. I haven't formulated a really strong theory yet, but something from the very beginning didn't sit right with Joe.
Agreed. But how do you explain the neighbor being like, oh, that kid's been here for a while. He was moving computers out, and then he got in the car with Brooklyn.
Other than it being two different situations, I can't. I mean, it's quite possible that she went somewhere with him and returned a short time later. And then, for whatever reason, planned or unplanned, came into contact with Joe.
Do you want to know what I think?
I really do, because nothing... Like, I have this bad feel around this.
Me too.
But I can't really firm up a good theory.
My gut, and this is just... And I apologize for speculating about people, but... Actually, you know what? Both her dad and Joe have passed away, so...
I mean, regardless, we always tell you guys that we would take a takedown an episode and we would give an update on a case anyway, no matter dead or alive. So, yeah.
Here's where I think. I think Joe, her dad, and likely people her age in her social group plan this robbery, right?
Sure.
Now, Joe and her dad need to have alibis because they don't want it to come back on them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to pay... You know, some of Brooklyn's quote-unquote acquaintances, the drug people, you know, will pay you, go in, rob my house, whatever. And fine. Well, then one of them is friends with Brooklyn, and he tells her that he's going to drive her home, right? He's going to drive her to her boyfriend's, whatever. And he tells her, like, and she's probably freaking out about this robbery. And he's like, hey, like, don't freak out. Like, it's not actually a robbery. And he tells her whatever. So she is pissed, right?
Sure.
And she's like, part of me wonders if she's like, nope, I'm telling the police it was not a robbery. I don't want to be involved in this crap. I'm done.
Yeah.
And that escalated to if Joe was the mastermind. He's like, hey, meet me. I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. But that means her dad had to have known.
He at least can put the pieces together.
And part of me wonders if the overdose was on purpose because he felt guilty.
Possibly.
Whew. And that's my speculation. I'm not...
How many years later did he overdose and die?
4 months.
Oh. Okay. I mean, it would line up. And it would explain a lot of things.
Right?
Yes.
But, like I said, her sister strongly believes that her dad could not have known or done anything. Which I understand, because you don't want to believe your dad, you know, could have been involved.
Or he was misguided or whatever.
Right. I just don't know how you fit this 19-year-old she got in the car with into the story if we think... I don't think Joe acted alone. If Joe did it, I don't think he acted alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this is what I mean. There's no real theory in that she didn't leave her life. She didn't die by suicide. you know, like she met with foul play. But was it with this Joe character? Was it with the guy she got in the car with? Was her sister saying the robbery was set up just a guess and it was really just random people that hurt her?
Your theory makes sense to me.
Right, no. Which I hate because it's a very much an I know what you did last summer theory. Multiple people know.
And that was going to be my next point. Not one person has said, you know, it really sucks. I didn't want to be involved with this insurance scam, but I don't want to be a part of this murder one. So here I am.
Especially since her dad and Joe have both passed away. What do you have to lose to give her family closure? Why not come forward now and say, hey, listen, now that I'm not terrified for my life, right? Because if Joe threatened to hurt him or her, you know what I mean?
But if everyone's deceased, you could be feeling like, well, they want to prosecute someone and they can't prosecute either one of them, so it's going to be me.
Yeah, I guess. Now, I do want to say one thing, and I hate doing this because it's an unsolved case, but the disappearance of Gene Deringer, who you don't know yet, I'm introducing it for the first time right now, he disappeared in 1996. The last person he was with was Joseph Nowicki.
No way!
And he's never been found.
Are there any articles that actually linked them, or...
I mean, they were co-workers and friends, and Joseph said I was the last one to see him. But when I saw him, he was with another woman. But the woman has never been identified.
No way.
But I'm just... I'm just putting that...
What was going on? I don't want to get into another case. So,
yeah.
Do you think that he could have just nonchalantly been like, I'm going to kill you because you're threatening to tell about insurance? This guy's... been in and out of jail.
Okay, but then who is the 19-year-old and what happened? And why did would the neighbor see him robbing the house and then her getting in the car? Like, how do you connect those things?
Even so, how does this rise to the level of I need to murder you to shut you up?
Unless she's gonna throw him under the bus. Unless he was infatuated with her and he tries to like assault her and she's like, you know what, I'm done, insurance fraud, drug dealing, now this, I'm done, I'm telling the cops everything.
So it was kind of like a moment of rage, possibly. It makes more sense to be something emotional and in the moment. Premeditation, people do really wacky things all the time, but I just feel like insurance fraud and murder. What is the...
Amy, first of all, people kill for less. Like, let's be real.
Of course. I know. Well, what is the stay, or what is a typical sentence for insurance fraud in Indiana?
Well, I'm sure that when you're a felon and you have all these other things on top of it, that you don't want to go to jail for insurance fraud because they're probably going to hit you with multiple things. But would Brooklyn throw her dad under the bus? Because now she has to say her dad committed insurance fraud, too. I don't like any of it.
Okay, so, and then you want to go back to the 19-year-old or the boy in the car and how he's tied into it. What's a scenario where he might not be tied into it?
Do we believe the neighbor saw the same one robbing the house?
I have no reason to doubt this person at this time.
Right. Like, think about if you notice across the street in your house, right? If I'm sitting here, I'm looking out my window and I see my neighbor moving stuff out, right?
Yeah.
And then I see his kid get in a car with the person moving stuff out. And the police say she's missing. Well, I'm going to say, hey, wait, I saw her getting in the car with the guy that was moving the computers. To me, that seems like that's a very plausible. I don't know why they'd make that up.
Right.
So she gets in the car with the guy that robbed her house. And I have to believe she didn't know if it was a setup. She didn't know that. Right. Like, I don't think that she was aware of the insurance fraud, if that's true.
Yeah, I don't get the feeling that she did. Because isn't she on probation?
Yes.
She would have a lot. She's done all this work to get her life back together. She's with someone who's probably awesome for her. And
her sister says that much, that he's awesome for her.
Right. So, like, you kind of, when you're with someone that is doing better, you tend to do better, too. In a lot of cases, not all of them. And you're trying to get your life back on track, and you've kind of been doing that for months and months and months and months. You're almost done. You're almost at the finish line. And then you invest yourself in an insurance scheme?
No, I don't think she knew at all.
It's not right. So I'm just trying to personally cancel that as well as a valid theory. For me, it makes, unless she had a relapse or something, which there's nothing indicating that she did, then I don't see why she would go backwards.
I agree with you.
And, oh, boy.
You know, like, and you've heard us say it before, we in general do not judge for addiction, right? We both believe it is a mental illness.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, you know, I'm not saying her dad's a terrible person for being an addict, but I'm wondering, when you are an addict, right, your social circle tends to be people that are like-minded, right? So if you run with a group of addicts or drug users or casual users or whatever, and you hang with your best friend is Joseph Nowicki, who had, you know, he was in jail for attempted murder, aggravated battery, he's been charged with rape, that's that unknown missing persons case. I have to believe that I don't think you hold someone's past against them, right? If you meet someone that has a past like that, but they're on the right track, right? Then you say, great, you're on the right track. But when you meet someone like that and they're continuing the same behaviors, you have to know that they're dangerous. You have to know that they're not of sound mind. And I don't even know where I'm going with this except for to say, Joseph Nowicki is likely did this, but I don't know how he connects into everything else.
And I think that's exactly where my issue is at this point. I can't explain the other things. But yes, this guy seems like he just casually is capable of murdering people. And that's a stretch. So I apologize. You know, that was fueled by speculation, but I don't know.
And the one thing I will say is that her sister eventually does kind of concede that her dad may have known something, but he's definitely not involved. But one thing I do want to say on this case is her sister says that on her sister's birthday and anniversary of disappearance, she gets text or a call or an email from the detective saying, I'm sorry I haven't found your sister yet, and I'm still working really hard.
Oh.
And, like, I love hearing stories like that about law
Absolutely.
Enforcement. So, I don't know. It sounds like they're really working hard at this. It sounds like they want to do the right thing. I just really want to tear my hair out that it sounds like, and I know you did last summer, kind of story. And I guess it's that, you know, that old saying that, like, two people can keep a secret if one person's dead?
Yeah. Unless...
Well, if...
Go on. Sorry.
Oh, well, I was going to say, if this 19-year-old Joe and her dad are all the ones involved, right? Then only this 19-year-old is left.
Well, what if that means he's involved? So we've been...
That's what I mean.
With an actual murder. So we've speculated that this boy, young man or whatever, has been involved with the insurance scheme, right? But we can't link him in. What if something crazy, like he drove her to Joe and he witnessed something, or he was responsible for maybe even the aftermath? Like, not to...
Well, I'm going to say this. I agree with you there, because if Joe called 12 people for a ride, It wasn't planned.
Correct. That's a good point.
He didn't plan on leaving her car somewhere. He went there and just did it and was like, oh, crap, now I gotta get a ride back. So maybe this 19-year-old, like, she tells him, I can't believe you guys did this. I'm telling the police. He accidentally hurts her. Well, not accidentally. He hurts her, but not intentionally. You know what I mean? Like, those, like...
He intends to hurt her, but not kill her.
Right. And then he calls Joe, who's like, oh, I've done this before. I got this. Don't you worry about it.
Something like that.
And then Joe calls, you know, everyone else to say, like, it's taken care of. I don't really know. I don't know how you connect it all.
Because she got into a car at the beginning, and then her car's somewhere else. That would mean that if she's with the 19-year-old and she's not the one that got her own car, someone else did to drop it off at a different spot. Which actually tells me that the car somehow had to be involved. Otherwise, no one would have any reason for needing to involve the car.
So there's one other thing that I'm going to just throw out
there. Of course you are.
There's supposedly a witness, and this has not been confirmed by anyone, and it's a Reddit thing, so I hate, like, giving it any weight, that a witness saw her car at Joseph Nowicki's house the night she went missing, which would just solidify that he was involved. And if her blood is in his garage, I'd like to know what his wife has to say. Sorry, that just, like, clicked in my head that he was married. Can we ask her what happened that night? She's alive, right? Let's get her involved. What happened?
That's a great question. You just blew my mind a little. I don't know.
Yeah, it literally just clicked in my head that he was married, and I'd like to know where his wife was. Because, I'm sorry, if my husband brought a girl into our garage and then she was missing, I'd be like, excuse me. What happened?
Right.
Even if she was doing upholstery work for us or whatever it might be.
Yes.
I'd still be like, well, call the police and tell them you saw her.
Before that popped into your head, what were you going to say?
I don't even know that this is all crazy.
It is. I'm legitimately stressed. Thank you to you and our listener that suggested it. As stressed as I am, it's like really good. It's good to tease it out. I don't know that we got anywhere, but, you know, the more times you do it, the more able I would think to be able to come up with more theories.
All right. So I'm going to try to put a bow on my theory. I think that the guy she got in a car with was involved in the robbery, clearly, because the neighbor saw it. She was freaking out when she got in the car and was terrified about all the things. And he was like, hey, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but, like, it was us and your dad doing it for insurance money. So you're not in danger, basically. Because she was like, I don't want to stay here. Like, what if someone comes back? You know, she's like freaking out. He says that. So she gets pissed. So she calls her dad and calls Joe and is like, what the hell? Stop. This is ridiculous. I'm not doing this. I'm telling the police this is fake. And, like, loses it. So the kid brings her to Joe's house to, like, hash it out. Right? To, like, talk through it.
Okay.
And then he kills her, I guess?
And then
the kid leaves. Joe deals with all the things. And her dad has to know, but doesn't want to. Probably, I'm going to be comfortable saying this. Her dad probably knew, but didn't ever want to ask any questions because he didn't actually want to know.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. And then the car?
That's my. Well, when the kid drove it to Joe's house, so Joe drove it to the parking lot and needed a ride back. And basically, he told the kid to leave because the kid didn't need to be any part of it. But the kid probably knew.
Right. You know, it doesn't feel right, Melissa, but it's the best we've got. You know?
Nothing feels right except for this poor girl got her life back together, and then...
And then had it stolen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And likely because other people in her life hadn't gotten their lives together.
Yeah, that's very tragic. I hope that her family gets some closure. Mm. Well, thank you for boggling my mind on my lunch break. Appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. I live for it.
Well, thank you to our listener for bringing that to Melissa.
Yeah, thank you for doing that. The more cases you guys suggest with, I know what you did last summer, groups make me less and less believing that that doesn't happen.
Right.
And that's what I mean. I said at the beginning, you know, kids don't leave their lives. Well, Natasha did. And that's on Patreon, for those of you that don't know. And then, you know, people don't get together in a group and kill someone and no one ever says anything. Well, I guess they do.
Anything's possible. That's what we've learned.
Yeah, for real. So please tell us what you think. I know this is not our typical kind of missing persons, in that I believe she did meet foul play and from the jump. But I'd love to hear what everyone thinks about all these crazy players in this story. Mm-hmm. And how you guys piece this together.
Yep. Well, that's all I've got.
Me too.
All right. Well, we will see you next week with an all new case.
Bye. Bye.
About this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.